Amen. Nice to see so many of you on this warm August day, but hey, it's cool in here, isn't it? And I was pleased at how much I and I saw others jump when Gordon came in with the trumpet at the end of A Change Is Gonna Come. I thought it ironic because he was literally singing A Change Is Going to Come. And then it did, and it just made me grateful once again for the music of Gordon Kent. Such a pleasure. Our reading today is from Unitarian Universalist minister, the Reverend Julia Hamilton, writing when she was executive director of the New Jersey Unitarian Universalist Legislative Ministry. And this piece was written in January 2010, just after the New Jersey State Senate voted down a bill for marriage equality and ended that bill's progress for the year. This is what Reverend Hamilton writes. "It is not easy, this road to justice. But then again, easy is not what we were promised. In fact, we were not promised anything. We are the ones who have made promises, a covenant with one another that we will not give up, that we will be here for as long as it takes. It is a commitment that I do not take lightly. And every time we have the chance to side with love, every time we show up and make good on that covenant, we move closer to the beloved community that we are building together." Last year, I was struck by a thought that I've been wrestling with ever since about two things that are related but not exactly the same. And it came to me that there are some days where I feel like I can really excel at all the things I have to do in my life, at work and parenting and being a husband and a friend and all those things. And then there are other days where I feel completely overwhelmed by the exact same things. Has that experience ever happened to any of you? But the external situation is exactly the same. Nothing has changed with what we have to do. The only thing that has changed is our internal orientation. And so I've been wondering with this, and sitting with this question of, if the only thing that's changed is our internal mindset, what can we do to just change that on our own? Rather than feeling like some external force is changing it for us, what can we do to cultivate an internal mindset that helps us to feel better about ourselves and whatever it is we have to do that day, that week, in the world? I had the opportunity to experience this exact challenge in June, after doing an enormous amount of work, only to realize that I'd really messed up. So the annual Unitarian Universalist Association's General Assembly was in Spokane, Washington, which, if you're curious, is incredibly difficult to reach from anywhere. And I'd done a lot of work, successfully, I thought, to arrange an incredibly complex series of airline tickets and travel that included a round-trip ticket from D.C. to Seattle for me, a one-way flight to Spokane, a drive back from Spokane to Seattle with a friend to meet my wife and kids and another friend for some family vacation with which another friend was coming and then leaving early, and then my wife and I were all flying back together on the same plane. I used airline miles for one of the tickets, which adds a whole nother level of complication, and it all seemed perfect. Until, on my flight to Seattle, I realized that I had made the one-way flight from Seattle to Spokane on a different airline, and although I had given myself enough time to get from gate to gate under normal circumstances, I hadn't factored in that I needed to exit and get my bag from baggage claim and then come back through security. And so that was a comfortable flight. And I had calculated that basically, if everything went as fast as it possibly could, I could make that second flight. But when I got to ye olde baggage claim, the machinery had broken down. And when it restarted, you know, bags are coming out slowly. And I remember this distinct feeling watching them as they get spit out from the top and they slide across the slippery metal to the edge with this like skunk, skunk. And just staring and listening to that noise, skunk, skunk, and feeling like this is a very specific kind of hell. And I'm the only one responsible for it, really. This is entirely my own fault. Eventually, my bag comes out. I'm sure it's too late. I go to the electronic kiosk that says, it is way too late to check in for your flight, buddy. You gotta go get in line. So I get in line to see an agent, and I know at this point there's no way I'm making my flight. So I'm standing there feeling dumb and miserable in a long line of people who also look quite miserable. And an older gentleman who works at the airport, a baggage handler, or maybe a skycap, walks by with a warm smile and a gleam and just makes a very friendly joke to one of the gate agents. And I saw the gate agent smile and everyone else scowl. And it really helped free me. And I saw the folks that work at the airport, they see this every day. There is nothing whatsoever that is unique or special about my situation. And standing here feeling angry at myself or the machinery isn't going to help any single thing at all. Now, in that situation, I had someone else to remind me that I had choices. And it's always nice to get that outside help. But I also realized in that situation that we carry with us a vast, untapped power to snap ourselves out of it, to realize that misery can be optional, that we can make a different set of choices about how we feel about something. In our offertory song, "He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother," points out just that a simple way that we can reframe things. My brother weighs the same either way, but it makes a big difference how we approach that task and how we frame what we have to do. Now, so far, these examples, my travel screw up and carrying our fictional brother, are not particularly important in the grand scheme. But I think we can apply some of these same principles to the work that is at the center of our congregation, our faith, and in many ways, our nation right now, trying to build an inclusive, equitable, counter-oppressive, multicultural community. Now, y'all that have heard me preach before know that I tend to get real specific. So I'm going to do that and then zoom back out to the bigger picture. But one of the through lines between both the sort of lighthearted and more important examples is the basic principle that it doesn't have to be this way. We have options, we have choices. And although it may sound simple, recognizing those choices can be deceptively complex. Notably, the way we are socialized, according to a dominant culture where oppression is the status quo, it's all about keeping us from recognizing options. The status quo doesn't want us to perceive different options. And one of the main ways it enforces this principle is by keeping us ignorant of the water we're all swimming in. And so one of the most important ways that we can identify justice-centered and liberating alternatives is to become aware of our cultural context. In any congregation or organization or community or country, one of the first steps to changing culture is increasing our awareness of the existing culture. And not surprisingly, people with one or more marginalized identities are the best positioned to help those of us with dominant identities understand the dominant culture, folks that already have a perspective on what it's like to not be part of the mainstream. A multiracial partnership between trainers Kenneth Jones and Tema Okun created an incredibly helpful resource that's being used here at All Souls and in hundreds, literally hundreds and hundreds of other Unitarian Universalist congregations and organizations. A summary version is printed on the back of your order of service. It's a list of characteristics of white supremacy culture, the dominant culture in the United States. Please keep in mind that these characteristics can be present in people of all racial and ethnic identities. These are not individual characteristics or personal characteristics, they are cultural characteristics. And in order to change them, in order to move from that status quo column towards those liberating alternatives, we have to make an ongoing commitment to recognizing and naming the problems and an ongoing commitment to carrying out the alternatives. Quite simply, friends, we have to reprogram ourselves. And honestly, I think that many of the attempts made to make institutions less oppressive, including Unitarian Universalist institutions and some of the efforts that have been made in the last few decades, I think mostly because people with dominant identities have not recognized how much reprogramming is needed. I think many of us have unconsciously thought that the work of changing institutions was about other people changing, or about altering policies and practices. That's part of it, but it's such a small part. And I'm a big believer in this quote, which is often attributed to management theorist Peter Drucker. Culture eats strategy for breakfast. Which is to say that no amount of institutional policies or practices or programs can get the job done if the people who make up the institutions aren't willing themselves to change. Culture is like a river. If you do nothing, the current is carrying you. If you want to make progress, you have to paddle. You have to have a destination, or at least a direction in mind, and you have to put some work into it, a lot of work. Which brings me back to this question of mindset. Since this work is inevitably hard, what can we do to reframe our approach so that it feels more manageable? And for that, I turn back to our reading. It's not easy, this road to justice, but then again, easy is not what we were promised. In fact, we were not promised anything. I very vividly remember reading this statement when it first came out in 2010. I'd done so much work for marriage equality, and every setback was disappointing, but those lines, easy is not what we were promised. In fact, we were not promised anything, were some of the most important words that I could have heard at the time, and I have never forgotten them. It's not on the list, perhaps it's simply too obvious, but I'd say that entitlement is off. Also a key characteristic of white supremacy culture. And Hamilton makes it clear that whatever the outcome, showing up matters. Doing the work, regardless of outcome, matters. We're not guaranteed anything, and we don't know how it's going to turn out. We don't know how all this is going to go. It's all an experiment. This, what we're trying to do here in this church, with our faith, with our world, building a counter-oppressive, multicultural, multi-generational community, it's all an experiment. We're trying to create something that has never existed before. So rather than a mindset of entitlement, or on the other end of the spectrum, a mindset of despair, let's adopt the mindset of experimenters. And after all, we literally would not be here in this Unitarian Universalist congregation if our theological ancestors hadn't been willing to experiment, if they hadn't been willing to create something that never existed before. On the Unitarian side, our ancestors publicly and proudly affirmed the unity of God and of existence and of bringing reason and experience to reading the Bible and to seeking wisdom and truth. On the Universalist side, our ancestors publicly and proudly affirmed that all souls, not just some souls, could be saved. And then these two traditions, Unitarianism and Universalism, joined and embraced a humanistic perspective while retaining some of our Christian and our Jewish roots. We created something that never existed before. Here, at All Souls, our adoption of the eighth principle and the board's commitment to a transformation team, two significant actions deepening our commitment to racial justice, those are experiments as well. We're not doing this because success is guaranteed. We're doing this because we looked at the status quo, just like our forebears did, and said it doesn't have to be like this. In fact, it cannot be like this. Now, a moment ago, I mentioned despair, and I want to end with that. Despair! Okay, not quite like that. I want to talk a little about despair, because it is a word and a feeling that I know is coming up for many of you. It's coming up for friends. It's coming up on social media. And specifically, I want us to consider the ways that our experience of despair and our feelings of despair might also be products of white supremacy culture. First, I think it's easy for us to think of despair as a very rational, very objective response to circumstances. In reality, I think despair is deeply subjective, based on our expectations and our mindset. And remember, objectivity is a characteristic of white supremacy culture. In general, I think despair is based on a combination of our feelings and our predictions of the future. Two things that are not facts. They're not rational, but our brain tricks us into thinking that they are. For me, the deeper truth is that despair is neither rational or irrational. It's a feeling. It's a non-rational feeling. But second, however we define despair, rational, irrational, non-rational, in some ways it's irrelevant to my final point, which is akin to what I learned in the airport. Despair simply doesn't help. Feeling miserable, feeling despair doesn't help. And I think there are ways in which despair comes from an either-or mentality, which is another characteristic of white supremacy culture. It's this idea that the only options are either hope or despair, which is an utterly false and unnecessary framing. Both ungrounded hope and ungrounded despair are not helpful. So whatever it is you're feeling about the state of the church or the nation or the world right now, I invite you to take the bulletin, to take those characteristics of white supremacy culture, read them and reflect on how they're influencing your views, and in particular, how they're boxing you and boxing us in. And to think about what it's like to prioritize those liberating antidotes, to changing our culture in your life, in your home, in our congregation, in your workplace, in our world. And while I won't leave you with either despair or hope per se, I do want to leave you with a reminder of the power of courage and commitment and experimentation. How many of you were here in church on July 21st when Reverend Anthony Jenkins preached about Harriet Tubman? Okay, it was amazing. Reverend Jenkins is an African-American with a long history in the military. He is going to become an Air Force chaplain this fall. He serves at the UU Congregation in Columbia, Maryland now, and he preached wearing full military uniform. He's 6'5", an African-American, so a very impending presence. And at the beginning of that service, he said that one of the reasons he preached in uniform is that Harriet Tubman was never allowed to wear a uniform, despite her service. And he preached about her story in the first person. And it's up on the church website now. I heartily recommend that you listen to it. But if you're feeling down or powerless about the state of the world, I want to just remind you about Harriet Tubman. Here's a quick summary. She lived in the mid-1800s, escaped slavery, took 19 trips from the North back into the South, and rescued 300 people, never losing a single passenger. She was the first woman in U.S. military history to lead an armed expedition, also aimed at freeing slaves. And she did all of this while enduring periodic blackouts and terrible headaches from a childhood injury which she sustained while helping a runaway slave. And she was 5 foot tall. I don't think she did that from a place of despair. And I don't think she did it from a place of indulgent optimism either. She did it because she believed in a better world and there was work to be done. So may it be with us.